And here we are.
Here we are.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I love that applause. But then there was such a gap there.
The applause?
Yeah, did you hear the applause?
Well, yeah, at the end of the music?
No, at the beginning of our show.
At the beginning of our show.
I think it was just coincidental that music faded away right there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That's true. That is a pretty large live audience we have here.
That's
today.
Right, here in the studio.
And then we started out with our meditative silence.
Yes, exactly. As we start all events.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of quiet, a little bit of get here.
Mm-hmm.
Take a breath.
Yeah.
Feel your body.
And then self-promotion.
Shameless.
Shameless.
Shameless self-promotion. Maybe we could run that promo again a couple of times. Yeah. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Welcome. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Great.
Good to be here, as always.
Yes. And today we're going to be talking about who knows what?
Who knows what? Well, we have lots of folks lined up to talk with us, and I bet they all have something interesting, informative, helpful, thought-provoking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Should we start? See what
Let's
they have to say?
Let's do it.
All right. I'd like to welcome Jenny from Santa Fe. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I wanted to share my experience with the last homework assignment.
Excellent.
It was very exciting.
Great.
What I wrote down for the assignment was to identify one place where the usual response is judgment and criticism and change that to kindness and see what it feels like.
Uh-huh.
So when I heard that on the last show, I realized that I had done that spontaneously that very day because I had lost my second job in a row. And so that would have been the usual situation where judgment and criticism would definitely have come in.
Yes. And we are programmed in that way, aren't we?
Yes.
Uh-huh. When something bad happens to someone, beat them up.
They're blamed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the good thing was, though, that I noticed that and thought, I'll try something different. And I went out and bought myself a big bouquet of sunflowers, which I'm still enjoying, and some little inexpensive treats. And I want to tell you that just changed the whole thing around.
Uh-huh.
And possibilities began opening up. I started just letting myself brainstorm creatively about what else I could do.
Uh-huh.
And after that, I started noticing more places where judgment and criticism were there, much more subtly.
Mm-hmm.
That I wouldn't have noticed before.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I could bring kindness to that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's key for all of us, that so much of that demoralizing, debilitating negativity that goes on in our lives happens under the level of conscious awareness. We're being sort of distracted by other things, and the talk that's going on underneath is just a constant, this is wrong, that's wrong, why'd you do that, why'd you say that, this happened, that means that. But when you're there and present to it, then you get to see it, recognize it for what it is.
And when you see it, you can do something.
Yeah. And so, of course, what you did in this situation is be for yourself the way you would have wanted somebody else to be with you mm-hmm. under these circumstances.
Yeah.
And the way that we guess you would be with a friend, a loved one. Who was going through the same kind of circumstances.
So being a friend to myself.
Yeah. So I have on my shirt right now that says, do unto yourself as you would have others do unto you.
Words to live by.
Yeah, and that's what you did. And the result is, instead of plunging into this pit of despair that it would have taken you who knows how long to get out of.
How long? Months.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Instead, somebody's kind to you. They like you. They're supportive. And suddenly, there are possibilities, things are opening up, life is working. It's a very, very different experience.
Yes, and I've noticed, too, that I can't cling to this state. That doesn't work.
No.
Making it last.
No.
But what I can do is keep coming back to it.
That's right. In the same way that if you do something kind for somebody else, you can only get so much mileage out of that. Right? Because life goes on. They're going to forget
yeah.
that you did that kind thing. And it's, you know, it's not considered good taste to keep reminding them that you did this kind thing so that they continue to be grateful to you. But you can keep doing kind things.
Right. And I notice there's this tendency like, well, you've done that for a while. Now it's time to get back to the worrying.
That's right. Now we've got to get back to the way life really is, because this kindness stuff, it's really artificial. It's kind of phony, and it's sort of new age, and we're just applying it on top of reality.
Because it's unfamiliar.
I guess
it's because it's unfamiliar that...
Yes, kindness is unfamiliar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for most folks. Even though it's how we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to feel and what we're supposed to get, it isn't what we get. So to practice that consciously and to make that your reality changes everything. And this is not Pollyanna. It's not this kind of, there's how life really is, but I'm going to pretend that I can be kind and everybody will be happy. When you are kind, you live in a different world. There is no such thing as the world as it is. The world is as you are.
The way you create it.
That's right. Yeah, well, and even creating, to me, is a step beyond. It's what you project. What you're doing is what you get, and that's what you're doing is what you experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's powerful.
It's so powerful. Wasn't it an earlier homework assignment to something about how the tension in our neck and shoulders, which is so common with people, is a way of creating a certain personality?
Well, I don't know if we said that, but I would certainly agree with it.
Well, I think you did say it. I was working with it earlier, and I noticed one morning lying in bed that thoughts came in of what I had to do that day, and the muscles just started tightening
yeah.
up.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And in the past couple of days, I've had a real bad attack of it, and I wonder if that isn't just in response to being so kind to me.
Oh, I think I would pay close attention, because I think you're on to something.
Because what you said at the time was you have to be willing to become a different person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
It feels like becoming a different person to be kind all the time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So the muscles of the body are configured in such a way that they will automatically keep your identity in place.
Just in case you forget.
Exactly. You can go completely unconscious, and the system is configured to maintain itself.
And that will certainly bring all those stories back, and
yes.
And thus the identity.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, thank
That's
you
good.
So much.
That's great. Thank you for.
Okay.
Thanks for letting us know that.
You're welcome.
All right.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Perhaps if some other callers have response to our homework as well.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. Huh?
Yeah. So if you want to join our conversation today, you can call us at 650-723-9010. And our homework assignment, as Judith mentioned, is replacing judgment with kindness.
Mm-hmm.
One time.
Judgment, criticism of oneself,
yep.
As the previous caller indicated, or with others, with someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah, just looking around at the world and which I can get into once in a while. You know, why are they this way? Why is that? That's wrong. And why don't people? It's so easy if they would just do it right. And then to bring kindness, because I was driving down here today, and I pride myself in being a very kind driver. Okay, so I acknowledge people for. You know, blah, 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 blah. And I'm also, as you know, a very fast driver.
Yes.
And I'm deeply grateful when people who don't want to go fast pull over and let those of us who want to go fast go by. And so I'm going down the road, and this fellow just very graciously looked in his rearview mirror and at the first opportunity put on his blinker and pulled over, and I was multitasking, and I didn't acknowledge him. It was one of those moments of not being the person that I think I am. And so there's an opportunity to be kind to myself. And it's also a little reminder for me that people who are generally speaking kind can have little moments where they miss their opportunity to be kind. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're a jerk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It doesn't mean they're not, of course. But, it's just that good little reminder. So what is the matter with me? Well, gosh, maybe they weren't focused on me.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe they were doing something. Maybe they forgot. Maybe they, God forbid, had a moment of unconsciousness.
Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't. Yes. It doesn't mean they're evil.
Yes.
So just to take that little breath and say, "Oh, well, what else could be going on here?"
Uh-huh.
Be helpful for everybody.
Yes. Yeah. The word that comes to mind for me is magnanimous.
Yeah.
A chance to be
generous.
Generous.
Yeah. Exactly.
To recognize.
And of course, we ourselves, as the callers indicated, we benefit first, and
yes.
then it goes out to anybody else. When we can have that kind of generosity toward ourselves, then it's easy to have it for other people.
Absolutely. Wow. So we bring it to ourselves, and then we have a chance to share it with mm-hmm. everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone benefits.
Everyone benefits. Instead of being a selfish act, which, of course, we're conditioned to believe it is, being
yes.
nice to yourself is selfish. It's actually the first step toward being kind and generous to everybody else.
Yes. So taking care of ourselves allows us to take care of others
yes.
as well.
My teacher would call it being a social relief.
Yes.
You're taking care of yourself. You don't need everybody to stop their lives to take care of you. You're not a pain in the neck walking around just this bag of unmet needs. So you're being kind to you, and good. I don't have to worry about there. Now, if I can be kind to me and you can be kind to you, then there are two of us. Now we can go along, and maybe somebody else will join us, and one person after another would rather be in the sort of in the kind group than the unkind group, and
right.
it's a takeover.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we're kind, that's just how we are, whether it's with us or with others.
Yeah. And it's more fun.
It's more fun. Great. And more fun is another caller. How about that?
Yeah. Yes. I thought for a second you said color, and I was thinking, well, gosh, really?
What is the color of kindness?
What color is that? Because I want to know about that. But
yeah,
we actually have another caller.
We have another caller,
excellent.
And maybe a caller can tell us about color as well. I'd like to welcome Molly from Phoenix. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. Well, I have been having some experience with not being so kind.
Uh-huh.
And kind of observing it and doing my best. What happened? It's kind of been a couple of weeks ago, I found out that my youngest sister was unexpectedly expecting a baby and was feeling really confused about it. And I find that I have a lot of compassion for her. And
mm-hmm.
It's very easy for me to be a safe place for her
mm-hmm.
and to be supportive and really just to care about her
mm-hmm.
and not to have any expectation of the outcome or anything about that.
It's in our sphere, we call that unconditional.
Yes. Very easy to have unconditional love for her, where
mm-hmm.
it's clear to me that I don't care what you decide to do as long as you take care of yourself and feel good about what you're doing.
Yeah, or even you don't even have to feel good about what you're doing. And you technically don't have to take care of yourself.
Hmm.
Right? There's the unconditional element. In other words, I'm going to love you no matter what.
Yes.
Yeah. You can't.
It doesn't matter what you decide or don't decide.
That's right.
Or anything.
You can't be or do anything that I'm not going to love.
Right. No matter what, I'm just crazy about you.
Yep.
What I've been having trouble with, and then it's led to something else, was with how my parents are dealing with my sister about it.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I'm involved on two different levels, where I talk to my parents about it as a confidant to them and how they're feeling very afraid of being financially responsible for this child and so on and so forth, I also hear from them and my sister how they use a lot of guilt and shame and self-hate, really, to get her to terminate the pregnancy. You're so selfish. How could you even think this? You don't even have your own life together. I mean, clearly, what are you thinking here? I don't know if we'll be able to have a relationship if you decide to have this baby.
So we could say not quite having reached the unconditional stage
right.
of love.
Right.
Very conditional, in fact.
Very conditional. Mm-hmm. And also throwing in the confusing part, which is trying to mask it with, we're really just concerned about you.
Mm-hmm.
When I project that they're terrified, that certainly they care for my sister, but there's a lot going on with them. And mm-hmm. like when I said to my mom, you know, what would be the kindest thing for you to do for yourself right now if there's nothing you can do about this decision? And she said, no, I would be fine if your sister would just decide to terminate this pregnancy, then I would be fine.
Yeah.
So
if you would just be different, I'd be fine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was fine before you came along.
Right.
Yeah.
Just get your act together and we'll all be fine.
Yeah. Gosh, and I mean, we can all find ourselves there, right?
I find myself there.
Mm-hmm. You are in relationship to them as they are in relationship to your sister.
I absolutely am.
Yeah.
And it's almost there are two things. Like, I can see what it must be like for them and how difficult this must be, and I can see that they're certainly doing their very best
mm-hmm.
and that they are not intending to do any harm.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I can see that they're creating this whole different dynamic
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
on top of a difficult dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Not dynamic, just a difficult happenstance.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, only made difficult because we have the ability to see ourselves as separate from life.
Right.
Because if we didn't, because there is no parallel reality in which, that we know of, in which this didn't happen.
Right.
So this is just what we've got. And we make whatever life is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with all this, you should have known better. This should have never happened. Well,
and
if you would only do this. Yeah, and we're, of course, that's what we're doing to ourselves and one another all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, all right, well, this is what we've got. So here we are.
Yes.
And the point that I think I hear you looking at is, this is what we've got. How can we move to a place of being unconditionally loving in this situation, in these circumstances?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
because everybody's looking at it, right? I mean, everybody's in the same place. Your sister is in that place
mm-hmm.
because she's dealing with her parents who, we guess, excuse me, she loves and cares about.
Mm-hmm.
And you're dealing with your parents because they are not being who you want them to be. Of course, she's not being who they want her to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the process is exactly the same for everybody, even though the content is different.
It is.
Yeah, if you're not being who I want you to be,
mm-hmm.
I can't love you under these circumstances.
Yeah, I can't love my parents unconditionally because they're not unconditionally loving my sister.
Exactly.
And in fact, when I talk to my parents on the phone today, I take it to the next level of self-hate, which is my mother tells me something about some story about something that happened, and she says to my sister, well, you know, that's just your fault because you're making bad decisions and blah, 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 something like that. And I just went off.
Oh, it's painful, isn't it?
I went off and I said, you know, and there is just this part of me that I see that wants to protect my sister, that's mm-hmm. really about me.
Oh, yeah. Of course, you want to protect your sister because you share these parents.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it serves up this wound of mine around
yes.
this conditional love.
Absolutely.
And my mother was saying something like, well, you know, really, we just want what's best for her, and we really just unconditionally love her. And that was like, just put your finger in there and dig around. And
mm-hmm.
I was terrible to her.
Mm-hmm.
I just said,
yeah.
You know, the one thing you do really well is conditionally love people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horribly painful for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I can't let you get away with saying that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can be supportive of you, but I can't stand by what you just said. That's so not true for me. And, I mean, it was nasty. And
yeah. Yeah, it just, there are some life circumstances that just seem to bring out the very worst in conditioned human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Death is one. Okay. Somebody dies and really otherwise nice, kind, civilized people just turn into vultures over the possibility of getting something.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of situation where, you know, somebody gets pregnant at the wrong time, somebody turns out to have a sexual orientation that is not approved of, somebody decides to get involved with an unacceptable person, you know, suddenly all of that "I love you no matter what" just goes out the window, and it's like, "But I didn't mean that." Mm-hmm. "I will love you no matter what, but you now you can't expect me to approve of or accept this kind of thing." Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to me how regularly life presents us with these opportunities. Kind of almost as if, I'm not going to say this, but almost as if part of being alive is coming up against these situations and having the opportunity to go beyond our limitations into the unconditional. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and almost nobody wants to take that route.
It's seeming so, mm-hmm. I'm watching it happen and saying, "No, that's not it," to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And to my parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And still going, "Okay, what is this? Drop it and breathe."
Yeah, yeah.
And just being perplexed.
Like, yeah.
"All right, I'm breathing. I can breathe."
Right.
"And that's all I'll do. You know, I'm not being able to grasp, drop it right now. I have been able to grasp it in the past."
Well, now, of course, the stakes are really high.
Yeah.
Right? And one of the things that conditioning does to us is make us believe that if you can't do something perfectly all the time, it doesn't count.
Yeah.
And that's not true. You keep getting hit with bigger and bigger tests, right? Kind of, you know, you're going to school, you start out, and you're going to be a lawyer, and, you know, you get your textbooks, and you start reading, and then you have your first little, you know, pop quiz or whatever it is, and it seems really, really, really hard. But it's nothing like the ones that you're going to get in 3 years.
Mm.
Okay? But you're going to be ready for them in 3 years because you've been studying and working and learning and doing all of those things. So by the time you get ready to take the bar, you are prepared. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you couldn't expect a first year law student to pass the bar. It's not gonna happen.
True. And
yeah, so just think of yourself as a, depending on how you're doing, first year, second year, third year, okay, because you've been in some situations that have been really challenging, and you have remembered to get off it and come back to the breath and choose to be compassionate instead of critical and judgmental. You have. And then you've been hit with some things that you've just done what your parents have done. No, no, I cannot. No, there's the line. You can't. No. And so we watch that. And one of the things that happens as a result of seeing ourselves there is we don't have to wonder how they're being the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Because you know they've come up against the same thing. So they want to be loving and supportive and caring. And then all of a sudden there's a line there and everything in them goes, no. And they dig in their heels and get ready to fight. And as you notice talking with your mother, those fights can get ugly fast.
Mm-hmm.
So then everybody, you know, in the professional fighting, you know, the referee comes in and sends you to your neutral corners,
mm-hmm.
okay, where you get water thrown in your face and you get calmed down, you know, and then you come back at it again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you come back at it, and the instruction is to fight fair, okay? And then everybody gets wound up, and the emotions get too high, and it turns into a free-for-all, and people are doing anything, biting, you know, hitting below the belt, anything to try to survive, and then the water in the face, everybody breathe, calm yourselves down. It's a great parallel, you know, it's a great picture of how we operate in our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is there's no referee. We don't have somebody to send us to our neutral corners, and there usually isn't anybody there to throw water on us. Okay, so that's why we meditate.
Yeah.
Yeah, to try to do that for ourselves. You know, you go to your neutral corner, there's your little meditation cushion or bench, and you sit there and calm yourself down so you can get to a place of remembering who you are and what's important and what's really going on here, who you want to be, and then you get up and go back into the fray.
Yeah.
And it's hard. That's the thing to remember. It's hard.
It seems hard.
It is hard. It is hard.
The worst is just the fact that I can see, and I can see that I'm judging myself on the fact that I'm doing the same thing that I'm so angry at my parents for doing.
That's right. That's
I'm doing. I'm doing it.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember the '60s and the civil rights movement, the beginnings of the civil rights movement, and the number of liberals in places like where I lived in California who hated white Southerners for what was being done to black Southerners.
Mm.
Well, you know, identifying a new group to hate doesn't actually technically take us anywhere.
Mm-mm.
Right? So I'm just hating this other group. I'm hating white people for hating black people.
Right.
How insane is that?
I mean, very helpful.
Yeah, we don't even bother to get to know people. We just have these prejudices.
We'll just want a different group of people.
Against it, exactly, which is, to me, what you're looking at.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's very painful, very difficult, and extremely helpful. Again, because you can't look at your mother and say, I just don't know what's operating this woman.
Mm-mm.
You certainly know what's operating her. And it's the same thing that's operating you. So where does the work need to happen? You know, our culture says, our conditioning says, you just need to make a good enough point to get your mother to change.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she said, you know, her cultural directive is she's just got to say the right thing to get her daughter to terminate this pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So we've all got to, okay, I've just got to find the right person, get them to do the right thing so that my problems go away.
Right.
And of course, with awareness practice, we say, oh, you know, let's bring this back to the source.
Who's who?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so what are they doing? I don't know. So let's look at somebody that I can have access to, me. So what is going on with me? Well, exactly what I'm projecting onto all of them.
Yeah.
You know, so you wind up with, you are both. You are unconditionally loving and you're a total bigot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all are. So how do we make peace with that? How do we bring that unconditional love and acceptance to the bigot?
Well, I guess just that, were you really asking me?
Well, it's kind
you
of
wanted
rhetorical.
To know from me, didn't you?
but you're right there, right? Because here the mother is alive and well inside you.
I know, yeah. And I do, there's a part of me that goes to, okay, let's go back to the corner. Let's go back and breathe. Let's go back and whatever. And that angry one is
wants to take
the
you
one
over.
Who's needing the attention and not indulging her.
Not indulging. That's right.
But in
that's right.
Listening to her and
yes, of course.
Saying,
you, of course,
it
you
makes
feel
sense
that way.
That you feel that way.
That's right. In the same way that at a certain point you'll be able to say that to your mother. I can understand completely how you would feel that way. I do. I'm really sorry that this has happened to you.
And it's that cycle of, like, you think you're keeping your eye on it, and you look away for 1 minute,
that's
and then
right.
conditioning says, this is not working.
That,
look.
That's why.
You need to get her into shape.
That's why we call this.
Before she totally blows everything up.
That's right. That's why we call this mastery. You can never take your eyes off it for a second. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going for. The good news is that it is more interesting, fun, and exciting than anything else a person can do in life.
Yep.
Yeah. So write that on your bathroom mirror, okay? And let us know.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Molly. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name's Michael Gray. Challenging stuff.
Oh, life is tough.
Life is tough.
It's tough when we're not paying attention.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, all of these circumstances would be really difficult and painful if Molly weren't paying attention. And then try being the only one in the group who's really paying attention.
Yes.
And it's... it's that awful place where it looks way worse before it looks better.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm at this point, you know, I'm in the situation. I wake up to pain and suffering involved in this, and a pretty clear view of how it's happening.
Yes.
And I can see that I'm as much a part of the problem as anybody else is.
Uh-huh.
And seeing all of that can be extremely depressing.
Yes.
It's not really worse. It's just that, in this case, Molly can see it for what it is.
Uh-huh.
It's always been that way.
Yes.
But when we see it, it's like, are you sure this is not getting worse? And
yes.
It's not. But that step in there, or those steps in there, between unconsciousness and conscious compassionate awareness, what we get is compassion or consciousness with very little ability to implement it.
Uh-huh.
So now I'm conscious of exactly how bad it is, and the compassionate part is kind of missing.
Lagging.
Yeah, it's lagging. That's a better phrase. Yeah, it's not missing, it's lagging.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Fascinating. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call at 650-723-9010. Stay tuned at 6 o'clock. We have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian, and then at 9 p.m. we have the Bod of Euphony. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back, and we have another caller on the line.
American music, food, movies. It's hard to imagine our daily life without the influence of Latin, African, Asian, and other cultures. Fact is, the blending of diverse influences is the American way. So is the idea of opportunity for all. I'm Vanessa Williams, here to remind you that when people are denied these opportunities, that's discrimination. If you witness discrimination, call the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights at 1-800-552-6843. When we value and respect our differences, we all benefit.
I would say that's true.
Oh.
When we value and respect our differences, we all benefit.
Yes, because, of course, when we value and respect our differences, we find out they don't exist.
Aha. Uh-huh. When we look for those differences, they vanish.
They vanish. Because
yes.
what are we talking about? People with a different color skin. Well, we all have different color skin. People
uh-huh.
from different places. People from different ethnic backgrounds. People from, in that sense, we're all different.
Yes.
And in, to me, a deeper sense, we're not different at all.
We all
love, we care, we hurt,
laugh,
we
cry.
Exactly. All of those things. We love our young. We're by and large afraid of death. You know, just very, very common human experiences.
Uh-huh.
And, well, this is another subject, but it just never fails to astound me that we can assume others don't feel exactly the way we feel
uh-huh.
in that sense of wanting to be cared about and respected and appreciated and valued and
yes.
Seen for who they are and their unique gifts and contributions. It's just, I mean, how do we do that?
Yes.
It's amazing.
What amazes me is when people say, oh, I have nothing in common with this person, so I didn't know what to talk about.
Right.
I want to say,
oh, what species are you?
Like, you're human.
Yes, you have.
What do you mean?
You have everything in common. Every. And what kind of picayune little details do we have to get down to think I have nothing in common with this person? If you really have nothing in common with them, interview them, for God's sake.
Right.
You know, it's your
and
opportunity
find out.
To experience something that you think you've never experienced before.
Yes.
It's great.
Yes. Great. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber, and I'd like to welcome another caller. I'd like to welcome Sherry from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Good evening.
I just wanted to say how helpful this has been, this program, and listening to the callers.
They're good, huh?
The perfect timing
yeah.
for me.
Oh, good.
So I'd like to talk a little bit more about the internal process that goes on when I was listening to the last caller and I was thinking, you know, I have all of those voices and all of those people going on inside of me,
uh-huh.
where it seems like it's harder, at least for me, to at all get to that place of unconditional love.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Not because of them, but because of...
Oh, right.
Right? Who you believe yourself to be.
Exactly.
Which is, essentially, one of them.
Huh. I guess.
So, picture this. Mom and dad go off, and they leave their 12 children at home with the second oldest.
Right.
Can you picture it?
Yep.
Ugh, it's just bloody to think about, isn't it? Just brutal and ugly to think about. So here's this person trying to maintain control and order and discipline with a bunch of people who have no interest.
Yes.
Yeah. So can you picture yourself kind of in that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not even the oldest, because the oldest at least, you know, was there when all these others came along. So they have a little bit of authority. But you're the second oldest, the third oldest. I mean, it's hopeless.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and that the chances, I guess this is what I was looking at, is it seems like because it feels like they're all identities and they're all so far from unconditional love, that it's hard to imagine how that can come in.
Yeah, it is.
It's all judgment. It's all, I guess, just judgment.
Mm-hmm. So I just had an idea as you were talking.
What?
Now, I don't know if you'd be willing to do this, but if you're not, maybe somebody else out there will, and then they can report to us. I had this fantasy of getting an outfit of clothes for each of these people that you're dealing with.
Uh-huh.
And put the clothes on the coat hanger, and then do a little paper face for them. Okay? And you put them all around the living room, or wherever they'll all fit. You put them all in chairs or on the floor or, you know, wherever. And then you have a conversation with them. And every time one of them has something to say, you turn to that one and say, oh, so-and-so, you feel that blah, blah, blah.
Huh.
Can you picture it?
Yeah.
Now, just doing that will help you do what we call disidentify.
Right.
Yeah, because it becomes clear that you aren't any of them. Because they're all out there. You can look at them.
Wow.
Okay, so you then become the interviewer or the observer or the whatever it is. And the moderator. All
right.
You're doing is moderating. So, you know, we have rules of, what are those called?
Robert's
Rules of Order. Right. And so you explain to everybody, okay, only one person can talk at once, and we have to do this and that. And, okay, now, let's let the conversation begin. And then people start, and you call on them, and you ask them what. And that very process takes you out of the melee.
Right.
Can you picture it?
Well, I can. And what I saw that seems so important that I don't know what it happened when you were talking, but I saw that even the person who called in hated every single one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something that happened even when you were talking about it, and I don't even know what that is, but it was like it changed from, you know, this person who was like, maybe it was, you know, one of those 12 kids, but they absolutely hated all the other kids.
Oh, as they would tend to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have someone in charge of all these people who hates them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so what you're suggesting, there was something about it, and I don't know what, that it seems like it'd be helpful to know, like, what is it, do you think, that it's like gets out of that, the judge being the one, or whoever that is that hates them, being the one talking to them all?
Right. Well, and isn't that kind of our internal experience? It's like we have a lot of aspects of the personality who could be talking to us at any point in our lives.
Right.
But who talks to most people most of the time is the judge.
And what if that's the one that ends up doing the moderating of what you're saying? Like,
well, this is the trick. So you want to have extra outfits and extra coat hangers. Okay? Because when you realize, wait a minute, this is not a moderator. Because a moderator, you know, doesn't hurl vile comments at the panel. Okay, so you hear that and you go, wait a minute, this is not the moderator. And then you take that part and create, so there's the judge. Now the judge is over there. Get a black outfit, okay?
Yeah.
And they're in the robes, you know, maybe get a little white wig or something. And so there's the judge. And then you can see when that voice starts talking, you know, if you really want to get wild about this, you can put a big piece of paper down the front of them so you write down everything they all say.
Wow.
And then, oh, that's you. That's the judge. Oh, okay. All right. Now, what do you have to say? Okay. So once again, you've got the distance. Now, then you say, maybe you're going along, you get somebody who says, you know, this is stupid. I mean, here you are. You're a grown person, and you've got all these coat hangers, and stuff sitting around your living room and you're talking to them, for God's sake. Right. They're going to commit you any moment. And then you go, wow, now that doesn't sound like the moderator. So who are you? Okay, then you put that person over there. And you get it, that's what that person comes in. Pretty soon you've got everybody out there. You got all, it seems like we have an endless number of voices in our heads.
Right.
But we don't. It's actually extremely limited. It's just that they repeat all the time.
Right.
And if we're identified with someone who is believing them, then it always sounds new.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so I can have somebody say to me, for instance, you are such a loser. Well, if the person listening to that believes that that's true, then hearing it every time is like getting the information anew, mm-hmm. once again.
It is.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, I know that. God, how could I have forgotten? That's true. I am a loser. Oh, my. Okay? Now, if I'm not identified with that person, so, you know, here's Michael sitting here, and this happens out loud, and voice says, ah, Sherry, you are such a loser. This Sherry, not you, Sherry. Me, Sherry. Yeah, you know, Micah would say, perhaps, why are you saying that? Okay. Then there's that, huh, oh dear. Okay, because he's just invaded this private
right.
relationship.
Right.
Okay, so I'm going to step out of that and go, oh, that's right. Okay, well, that was self-hating, wasn't it? So I move into somebody who's going to go, oh, well, yeah, I shouldn't say that. I mean, I know that I shouldn't. Talking to myself that way is.
Mm-hmm.
Can you picture it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the fact that I hear this over and over and over, and I'm identified with somebody who believes it over and over and over, doesn't make it new information. So I may have, you know, I may have 20 folks who are operating in my life at any given time. Now, that sounds like a lot. Once you get to know them, it's like 20 people. If you had 20 people at a party and you knew them all really well,
yeah,
it wouldn't seem like a mob.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's such a good image of it, I think, because if you had 20 people over to your house and you knew all of them really well, you could walk up to anyone. You could stand there and watch and kind of have a sense of what they're talking about.
Huh.
Okay. So, you know that this person is really political.
Mm-hmm.
So they're bending somebody's ear about what's going on in politics. Then you've got somebody who's a sports fan. And you know that they're going over what happened in the game. You might not know which game, but they're going over somebody's play in such and such a game. Okay,
right.
They're talking sports. Somebody else, are you with me?
I am. And I have to tell you, though, as you're talking, the one that I've been listening to for weeks on end now, is yammering at the same time and saying, you know, you need to listen to me. Don't listen. You know, it's important for you to know.
Get that coat hanger.
Yeah.
Get that outfit. Get that piece of paper. Write it down. Because when that voice is inside your head, it's really powerful.
I know.
Because it talks to somebody who goes, really? Oh, what if that's true? Oh, my gosh. Maybe I do need to listen. As if you haven't heard it a million times already.
I know.
Yeah. So you put that person on the sofa, okay, and they begin to lose power over you.
Wow.
So the voice is in your head saying, but that's not me. I'm not that thing sitting on the sofa. But you're looking, and you know it is.
Wow.
Can you get a sense of that?
Yeah. I can.
Yeah. And the more it protests, the more you can see it as just this empty set of clothing, just repeating the same thing over and over and over and over and over.
Wow. And I think that's what's so helpful about listening to, like when you were talking to the other callers, is I could sort of hear some of the things that voice would say,
yes.
of the unconditional love, and I sort of, I think, got a sense of, wait a minute, you know,
yes.
maybe this isn't
yes.
me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, here's the big question. Will you do this?
Yeah, that's a big question.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
So do you have a cordless phone?
I do.
Okay. While you're finishing up talking to me, walk over and find the appropriate coat hanger.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And then look there in the closet and see if there's something that would be appropriate to this. But wait, you have to listen to me. You have to listen to me. Make it something old, okay? Kind of old and tired.
Yeah.
This person needs an old, tired outfit. Okay? Get them over there in the chair or on the couch or wherever it is, and see them as an inspiration to continue with the rest of the folks. You know, if you have friends around that you can talk to about this kind of thing, bring them on board. Have them help you pick out the outfits, create the whole thing, write down the what we call self-talk of that person. You know, maybe they'd like to do theirs. You could have parties. Okay, you could go to one another's houses and create this whole world, internal world externally.
And it's wild.
Catch on.
It's so wild, though, because even as you're telling me to get up and do it, like, I'm watching how it stops me.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, even though I can see it, I mean, it's totally this awful, evil part. It's like an old friend.
Yeah. Yep.
It's what has kept me in line.
Yep. Yep. And that's what you need to write on the front of that paper, what it says and what it's done to your life, not for your life. Yeah. So I think this is going to be way more popular than, say, Tupperware parties. Okay? This is a whole new direction that you could take your life in. You give, you put on identity parties with people.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Can you see it?
I've got to do it just so I can report back.
Exactly. And you will, won't you?
Yes.
All right. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Wow.
Is that a fun notion?
That was fun.
Yeah.
Now, for people who were just tuning in and didn't have a lot of...
What the heck
are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, most of us, I think, I mean, you know who the aspects of your personality are.
Yes.
Could you give us a 3 or 4 or 5 or so?
Let's see. There's a part of me who's very social.
Uh-huh. And just...
Talk to anybody all the time about anything.
Uh-huh. Just loves to chit-chat.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me who loves to do sports,
uh-huh.
athletic stuff.
Uh-huh. Do it, not necessarily watch it or talk
Absolutely.
About it.
You,
this is an athlete, not
athlete.
A sports fan.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Part of me who likes being quiet or by myself.
Uh-huh. So kind of a loner,
uh-huh.
but not with a negative
Absolutely.
Spin. Just somebody who really likes his own company, enjoys doing his own little stuff.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And part of me who really likes to work or do projects and
uh-huh.
organize.
Uh-huh. Yeah, gets really excited about, like, file folders and
I don't know about file folders.
Only if
accomplishing stuff.
Oh, accomplishing. So
yes.
It's not just organizing stuff, but it's really doing stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you see he sees a project and he can get into it and then he wants to take it to the end and have that feeling of accomplishment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is what we're talking about, of course.
Yes.
And with the previous caller, some of those folks that she's dealing with, and probably some that you have, and that I'm not going to ask you to divulge here on the radio, are not so fun and happy
uh-huh.
as a person who likes to be alone or a person who likes to get projects done. These are people who are devoted to saying mean and hateful things
yes.
and incapacitating a person. Causing them to have doubt and be paralyzed, as was indicated. So, we all have these aspects of the personality. We've grown up creating them, but that sounds way more volitional than it
yes.
actually was. For most of us, they're a process of adaptation.
Uh-huh.
So I go along and I need to survive, and the way I'm doing it isn't working, and so I just shoot off in another direction. Okay, well, you know, being that way isn't working to get your love and attention and approval. And, you know, these are formed when we're
So you're talking about
very young.
Childhood.
Yeah,
yes.
Very young. So I'm not getting the attention I need through being this way. Well, then I'll just squirt over here and I'll become
uh-huh.
this kind of person.
Uh-huh.
And then I just take that on. And there's the self-talk that goes with it is you've got to.
Yes.
So that judge character is formed to make sure that we are the person that we should be. And what starts out in most cases to be helpful turns into something very cruel and ugly mm-hmm. by the time we're adults.
Yes.
So anything that can help us get some distance and stop believing that that voice inside our heads it really has any awareness, insight, helpful information for us, that's just huge. That's, to me, that's the bottom line.
Yes.
Well, there are a lot of bottom lines. Okay. let's tell the truth. But one of the big bottom lines in awareness practice is that voice is not who I am.
Uh-huh.
That voice is something that was created to keep a small child in line so that that small child could survive. That has, it has, that relationship has nothing to do with my authentic nature. And of course, in awareness practice, what we're trying to do is get through all that stuff, past all of that stuff, down to that deeper layer, what was there before all of this self-hating conditioning began, so that we can have a sense of our authentic self. And because yes. it's a survival system, it's really fighting to keep us from getting through it.
Uh-huh.
Its job yes. is to survive, and it will survive if it kills us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it gets into some very scary, difficult places, because what started out to protect us now will turn against us if we threaten it.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, it makes something that would seem like it's very simple be very complex. So I decide I'm overweight. I want to take off some weight. It's hurting my heart. It's not good for my health.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you'd think that I would say, okay, well, I want to take off some weight. And then I would just do that. But if you've noticed, I can have that awareness and then I don't get to. So the voices talk me out of it. They talk me into eating. They talk me into not exercising. They beat me up for being fat. It's just this whole drama that gets kicked off, and we begin to realize that I'm not the one in charge of my life.
Yes.
If I'm going to be in charge of my life, I have to wrestle the control out of the hands of this survival system.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. And that's what you're talking about in terms of self-talk, is
yes.
these voices that we hear
yes.
in our head.
Yeah. Yeah. And, a quick trip to understanding that there's something else to us is being around a very small child before
yes.
this whole process starts, being around small animals
yes.
who are incapable of understanding the concept that there's something wrong with them.
Yes. Yeah.
It's wonderful. I mean, they're just totally who they are.
Yes.
Unselfconsciously, completely, utterly who they are. And, of course, most of us adore them for that. And we look at them, and if we're, we can find a little tiny gap in the conditioning, we can get a sense that we're projecting who they are from the same place inside ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And we can actually have an experience of our own innocence and inherent purity.
Uh-huh.
And then for most of us, the voices kick back in and, well, yes, that's what that little puppy is, but you're not. You're
uh-huh.
this and that, and you're always this way, and you've always been that way. And so as we pay more attention, we can really hear those voices, and we begin to very quickly to see that they're hateful, they're abusive, punishing. And then with some more awareness practice, we can get it that, and they're not right. What they're saying is not true.
Yes.
And then that's where we dig in and
uh-huh.
and start doing the work.
Hang in there.
Yeah, I shouldn't say start doing the work, because getting to that point is absolutely huge. But it's when we really see it for what it is. That
yes.
And the people who called in this evening, that's what they're doing. They're really seeing the players and sorting out who's who and what's what and what's true and what's a belief system based in suffering and self-hatred. And once we get to that point of, okay, I have these voices, I get caught believing them, I know they're not true, I know they're not real, that's where awareness practice really gets gritty.
Gets exciting.
Yes, gets exciting. I'm given to lifting heavy objects, and
yes.
It's one of the passions of my life. And the trainer that I have says, okay, dig in right here.
Okay? Uh-huh. And that's the place where, all right, we're all set. You know what you're doing, and it's going to be really hard. And so you want to bring everything you've got to bear on this.
Uh-huh.
You need, okay, this is the place. All right, dig in. Bring everything you've got to it.
Yes.
And that's what we're doing in awareness practice. We're
yes.
uncovering these places, and then we're digging in.
Yes. Exciting.
It's very exciting.
People are going to have to tune in again.
Well, I hope so.
I hope
and
so.
And call in, because hasn't this been marvelous having
it's
these folks join
wonderful.
Us?
Yeah. It's been wonderful. And as we get close to the end here, I have a couple announcements I want to make. We'd love to get some emails. We're having a special pre-recorded show next week. And so send us an email to openair@kzsu.org by this Friday.
Yes, and because I am going to be at beautiful Esalen.
Yes.
On the Big Sur coast of California.
Beautiful.
Doing a retreat.
Yes, next week. And then you'll be back the following week.
I shall, as we always say.
Let me get it. If the good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise.
That's right. Yes. And you know, in Carmel,
that's
a very
real
danger. And they were on the wrong side of the creek for months.
Oh, were they? A lot of rain.
Yes.
Yes.
So we're hoping that doesn't happen. Beautiful as it is, I would like to come back here.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. So send us your emails. Coming up next, we have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian. And then at 9 p.m., we have the Bot of Euphony. Any other words of wisdom we need to pass along?
Do we have homework?
Do we have homework? I think we do.
What is it?
I was hoping you would come up with that.
Oh, I see. Oh, we're going to create it here on
well,
the spot.
Well, if I had something right there, I would have.
Uh-huh. Well, it seems to me that it would be very good to follow up on what we were talking about with this last call.
Yes, exactly.
That whatever dilemma is going on, whenever we find ourselves in that place of this person is this and that person is that, and I feel really caught in a very familiar kind of a trap.
Yes.
Take those people out. Create your little coat hanger babies.
Yes.
And write down what they say and see if you can watch that argument go on right there in front of you.
See the personalities that are inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
What are those voices?
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Exciting.
Yes.
All right. See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.